I have for my AI is if I'm doing something, I'll say, you know, let's say like I'm training for this like obstacle race, and I'll say, oh, these are my stats, put together a training program for me. And AI oftentimes will make mistakes. It's like, I just told you this thing, you've made a mistake. You forgot that I'm Asian. You forgot that I have diabetes in my family. And so then I say, I want you to create a supervisor that reviews all of the content before you push it out to me so that I don't have to correct you all the time. Right? So now I have two agent layers for the same project.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I'm your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Maximus Lee. He is an executive coach and founder of Embolden LLC, in case you're wondering what kind of incorporation he had, where he helps small teams scale people and revenue. Those are important. He got his exposure to startups from spending almost a decade at Google Ventures. I'm sure he has some really good stories that we might have to edit out. There, he guided hundreds of founders through rapid growth, witnessing companies like Uber and Flatiron Health scale at remarkable speeds. Today, he draws on those experiences to coach the next generation of leaders in building mission-driven, high-performing teams. Welcome to the show, Maximus.
Hey, Kenny. It's an honor to be here.
I am excited to have this conversation. I felt like we probably should have just recorded our very first phone call as like a bonus episode or something like that. But mental note for next time. Tell me today, Maximus, what is on your mind?
I'll tell you what literally is on my mind right now from this morning. I read an article that basically shared the internet has just crossed the threshold where 51% of web traffic is now bots, not humans. And the top line was, the internet is now agentic. What are we going to do about it? And I've been processing that information with respect to my companies that I coach, leadership, and all the hype around AI. But isn't that interesting when you start to think, internet traffic is now more than 51% bots, which means the internet is now agentic. What are you going to do about it? That's an interesting thing.
Right? I hadn't seen that statistic, but it doesn't surprise me when I hear it. It's one of those things that you're like, oh wow, like that, you know, it feels real. But that is fascinating. So whether it's the article or just like your initial thoughts, you know, it says, what are we going to do about it? So what has been the prevailing wisdom in your mind, or maybe from the article? Which, you know, we can find and we'll link it up, around how we engage with the internet. Like what is that standard, that way of thinking, that mode of interaction, a pre-agentic, that you see circling that might not serve us very well as we move forward?
Yeah, I would say that there's probably three systems that I hear about. You know, the first one is we need to get on AI as quickly as possible. And that's a predominantly like tools-based, let's throw money at the problem kind of solution. Some of it is like, hey, the earlier we can get to monetize, we're going to make our money first, and instead of like cram everything AI into there. And I would say that, you know, MIT did some research around that, right? Where they said, oh, look at all the companies who threw money at this, over $2 billion invested, and the ROI is zero, right? Yeah. Like, not that much, you know, barely the equivalent of just human productivity, but so much dehumanization, layoffs, anxiety attached to the decision making. And then I think that you have people who are thinking in terms of, it's not real. Remember when VR was a thing that we were all afraid of? Remember when robots were going to take over our lives and wash our cars? So I haven't seen that happen.
Y2K.
Totally, right? I have companies that I'm working with more in the Midwest or sort of like Atlanta or Chicago, where they'll say, oh yeah, we actually penalize people for using AI tools in their writing because we think that it's not really doing their work. Mm-hmm. So you have almost like a total resistance-oriented because they're used to the internet that we built 30 years ago that was about humans clicking buttons, right? And so if you don't have a human clicking a button, you know, is that really a sale? Should you get credit for that?
Right.
You know, is that plagiarism? Should you get credit for that? You know, lots of just like companies that were trying to figure out, you know, is this even real work?
Right.
And then I think, you know, you have companies where I'm working with that are starting to figure out this is an ecosystem problem and not a tools-based problem. Hmm. And how do we design systems to deal with that? And I would say, you know, my example oftentimes is when they first built the Model T and built the car, right? You had salespeople going to farms and saying, you should buy my plower. It's going to make your job so much easier. It's going to make everything so much faster. And the farmers would say, so the cars are going to replace horses. How many horses are we talking about? And that's why we still use the language of horsepower today, right? But they're like, oh, it's like 10 horses, it's 20 horses, because the farmers in the procurement process, in the buying behavior, were asking the question, how many horses are we talking about?
Gotcha.
But the thing actually is the delay, right, is that if you used to have, let's say you grew carrots, and you used to have 4 wagons, right? And you had 10 horses, and you, you know, hitched 2 horses per wagon, and they went to 4 different cities with your carrot harvest. And now you bought a 10-horsepower car. It's not a direct replacement, because you used to have 4 wagons that went to different places, and now you have 1 car. You try to get 1 car, and you don't plan for gas. Mm-hmm. Now you have carrots that are rotting in the back, right? Because the cities are too far apart. And the ecosystem was, right, where are we going to build the gas stations? And how do we think in terms of utilization, right? How do I think in terms of routes, not wagons?
Yeah.
And that's not a question that 10 horsepower is going to solve for you, right?
Right.
Somebody needs to do that utilization analysis, which is systems, and then those systems that led to urbanization, right? Mm-hmm. Which then led to cold chain, which then led to a whole bunch of innovation things that had to first discover, oh, we have rotting carrots. I have a waste problem, right?
Right.
This is not a great replacement. And then think in terms of like what that next generation is going to be. And in the same way, I think that we have bought in ROI, right, horsepower argument from procurement about the tools value of AI. We're not thinking in terms of wagons. We're not thinking in terms of scams and fraud, mm-hmm. right, and troubleshoots, which is like you're rotting carrots. And we have too many companies where 10 employees have 10 agents that all have little pieces of the pie fighting against each other, nobody being better than any single individual because the context isn't being trained properly, when right. they really should be building, right, a harness mm-hmm. system where it's like a company-level master AI that then helps every person, right,
yeah.
have more context, be better at their job. You have yeah. to think in terms of this. So I think that's where it's like, okay, the 51% brings the urgency of that situation so much, I declare.
Yeah, man, lots of good stuff there. The thing that comes to mind is, and I noticed this in some other places, and I've had some conversations with my own clients and coaching them, and how can they leverage AI on their behalf to be more effective, more efficient, get more done. You know, they're all visionaries and they want to make all their wildest dreams come true tomorrow. But I've encountered so many who are frustrated with like, I put in what I want and then it spits out something terrible. And I was like, well, what context did you give it? What additional information, what background? Do you have examples of what you're looking for? How aggregated did you make the steps? Did you go like 1, 2, skip a few, 99, 100? Or did you go 1, 2, 3, 3A, 3B, 4, right?
Right.
I've seen it. It sounds like you and I have observed this in a couple different ways of we're actually trying to impose what is now or soon will be an outdated mode of thinking mm-hmm. on a technology just plain doesn't fit. But we've had decades to where this thinking was iterative and it could still apply. And it was just like, how do we get more out of the internet, more out of the internet, more out of the internet, right? And I mean, the internet's the last big shift that we've had prior to AI to democratize information and make all the data available. And now we collect data, some people even against your will. That's a podcast for a different day. But But it's like, we can't think of it that way. I think the most simple version of this is when you hear people using like ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini or whatever. They basically just go and put their Google search in there. Yeah. It's like, this is not a fancy, it's not chat search.
Right.
And I'd be curious your take on this. Do you see this not just as a shift, a change in technology? Is it hyperbole to say that this is a fundamental shift in the way we live and work?
Yeah, I mean, I would go even as far as to say this is redefining the employer-employee relationship. This is actually redefining what it means to be a human at work. Because, mm-hmm. right, when we start to think about AI as human replacements, which is the big fear, right?
Right.
Is anybody going to come to my job? Fundamentally, you're saying this tool can make decisions for me.
Mm-hmm.
When maybe it's more accurate to say this tool can execute on decisions that I make from taste and judgment that I have, right?
Yeah.
That's the difference, right? Where it's like, oh, what's the difference? Like, why is search so powerful? Well, search is only powerful if you know the right question to put in.
Right.
And we already understood that with search.
Mm-hmm.
So if I type into search, I want a job, like the results are going to be trash. It's not, right? You say like, what is the most lucrative job in my zip code? It'll be better.
Right.
You have to learn how to do that. And then there was an entire industry that was about search optimization.
Right.
All of those things. We're sort of like, feel like we skip all of those steps with AI. And then we just say, oh yeah, like I got a customer service agent that can answer questions on the call and we'll fire the people. Right. And that's like, oh, all of a sudden now I am just a cog in a machine and my human judgment and my human context and my human taste doesn't matter at all. And I think that that's a shift that we need leadership
mm-hmm.
to really think intentionally about.
I like that. And you said a couple words there that I want to go back to about taste and judgment. I'm sure like you, I'm getting newsletters and podcasts and stuff on AI. I'm just fascinated by it. Plus, when you work with executives, it's top of mind for them. So like you and I got to stay up to date so that we can serve our clients well. But one of my favorites is the artificial intelligence show from Paul Reitzer and Mike Caput. Like, really well done. And I met Paul once. It was like, you ever listen to somebody for so long and then you meet them in person, you're like, I wasn't sure if you were real. But phenomenal show. And he was talking about an essay. I have to go back and see who wrote it, but that basically said the shift is intelligence is now democratized, not just information, but intelligence.
Mm.
But the leap that AI, broadly speaking, because I'm starting to feel like people use AI and don't actually know what they're talking about, or they're lumping too many things in for what they mean. But largely speaking, AI is democratized intelligence. But what it hasn't learned and doesn't yet have the ability for is taste and judgment. That's the part that separates us from the bots, from the skills, from OpenClaw running, you know, on a Mac Mini that you air gapped probably. So talk a little bit about that taste and judgment, because I don't think many people separate the things that I know from the judgments I make based on what I know. So can you help tease those out so that we can hold them a little better?
Yeah, I'll give you two examples. One is, remember when we talk about AI today and the AI tools today, we're talking about general artificial intelligence, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the intelligence that gets you to 70 percentile, 75th percentile, right, of public knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
If you are unique or differentiated in any way, like if I type into ChatGPT, hey, like give me a fitness plan, but I'm an Olympic athlete, that's mm-hmm. like a genetic anomaly. All of the responses are not going to apply or not going to work very well for me, right?
Right.
But like for the majority, 70% percentile of the population, it's going to work great. And you don't need to hire a trainer or any expertise to be able to do that. So the first thing that I really want to talk about is like judgment when it comes to any kind of specialized industry, right? I know a law firm that started to use AI for case discovery, digital corporate law.
Wow.
And they figure, hey, first year law students, they're doing research and analysis. If I give them some AI tools, it kind of makes them faster, right? Nope. 50% hallucinations, right? Because the AI is just not good at specialized information. And the way that they think about pattern matching is very flawed when it comes to these types of case law, right? Mm-hmm. And only a senior associate or a partner with like, judges don't like this precedent. Judges like this precedent. They have a different kind of case and judgment and context. And if you're not if you're not spending at least 20 hours of like training the AI to even understand that, they will make more mistakes, and it's going to be more costly to fix those mistakes than it is to like pay for the tool, right?
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. It's just like the democratized AI is general AI. And then the second thing that I want to talk about is most buying behavior, human purchase behavior, is emotional. We were talking about Chris Voss just before we started recording, right? And it's like, how does that even make sense that by asking questions that invite you to say no, you're going to be more likely to close for business than if I were to get say yes? How does that make any sense? Mm-hmm. And it's like, what do humans like to feel in control? Right? That's a taste and judgment like thing, right? That's not a rationality and data thing.
Right.
Like researchers show data plus data equals more polarization politically, not more alignment, right? And all of those things are just like part of the human persuasion experience.
Yeah.
So you're actually trying to educate, explain, onboard something. AI is a great tool for getting you from like F or zero to 50% or C, right? Mm-hmm. But to get you to A, there's so much complexity around that that's really different. And I love this example from IKEA, where they had people who were doing customer service, and they realized that, oh, it's just the same questions and answers over and over again. This is our policy, bring it in, here's the refund you have access to. And they replaced their entire customer service team with bots. And then we're going to lay off 8,000 customer service employees, except that, you know, because this is not an American company, the VP who was in charge said, I have 8,000 employees who really know the catalog and have fielded so many questions about how people want to use or inappropriately use our product. What if I repurpose them to do interior design? And they actually created an entire business line that was interior design as a business unit from these customer service agents. And by the way, right, that's emotional decision-making. How do I want to feel when I walk into my home? Cozy, calm, peaceful, on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like $13 billion new business that they have opened up at the company because they thought not in terms of the tool's execution of the answers, right, but they thought in terms of taste and judgment. And maybe what they realized was like, oh, customer service is not an area where people need to use a lot of judgment, but the humans that have judgment could actually be building my business more significantly than something else.
Yeah. It really sounds like there's a case to be made that AI, when appropriately utilized or fielded, enables us or gives us the opportunity to be even more human, right?
Yes.
Is that fair to say?
I think that is absolutely true. It certainly gives more importance to managers because you could build companies now, and these exist in tech, $30 million ARR companies, 7 to 12 employees. Every single employee manages, you know, a portfolio of agents, and they are effectively people managers, right, or agent managers with a lot of best practices on supervision, quality control, instruction, guidance.
Yeah.
Once again, they are the people who set the priorities, the judgment, the strategy, and the decision making.
Yeah. I forgot who made the prediction. I need to get better at remembering something. I might need an herb or supplement because I feel like I've said that 14 times already. But is that we will, in the not too distant future, see the first one-person billion-dollar company.
Oh, yeah. I believe that. No. Especially for marketing automation or brand.
Yeah. Which is ludicrous if you think about it. I mean, the just even to become a billion-dollar company is, you know, impressive in and of itself. And people have always tried to do it lean or with few people. I mean, payroll is usually your largest line item on your budget. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but it is a heavy expense on a business that's trying to remain profitable so it can reinvest in growth and all those good things. So long as they're, you know, trying to do it the right way. But one thing I'd be, I brought up the billion-dollar thing for a reason. And I forgot it, and that's okay. But I am thinking through, like, I know what it is. And this, we'll leave it all in, right? Because I'm human. That's why we're not using AI to edit out my flaws. I probably should have done this a little earlier on, but because we are talking about the internet being agentic and what agents versus artificial general intelligence, can you break down those two steps? Because I think people are using AI to mean all of it, but there actually are those sub-classifications. And some people may be lost when they start thinking about, like, what is agents or agentic versus regular AI and chatbots? Can you break some of that down a little bit, please?
Sure. Yeah. And I think, you know, AI on the one hand is an algorithmic or math technology that allows you to do very quick and very large scale pattern matching to generate insights, right? Mm-hmm. The earliest aspects of AI were basically just ads predictions, right? I have this like very specialized candle I want to sell. Out of everybody on Facebook, who are the hipsters that would want to buy my candle and then be able to find those things? Or, hey, based off of the last three searches that you did, mm-hmm. I think that I should try to sell you this vacation package, right? Mm-hmm. That's a form of AI because it's not a human saying, here you're like, what is this person going to do? Asking the question and getting an answer. The algorithm or the technology is going out finding patterns and then surfacing those and saying, you should maybe pay attention to this. These people might churn. This person will buy. And I think that then you had a type of intelligence, which was the earlier stage, very awkward types of, you know, chat interfaces mm-hmm. where they, if you ask them a question, what should I do? They will come up with an answer and then they say, my data only goes through 2005. This is the recipe that I think you should make for Thanksgiving based off of the picture that you showed me in your fridge.
Yeah.
And sometimes it says like mayonnaise should go into your turkey and sometimes it doesn't, right? So those are all types of AI technology. The products that are, this thing is now playing chess, you know, against a grandmaster. That is also a form of AI. Agents are the ones that feel like a personality and a human.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go into ChatGPT, which is a chat conversational interface, right? That feels like a person. Mm-hmm. The analogy of that is very relational. And you say, I want you to pretend to be a marketing expert and give me competitive analysis for my space and how I can grow my business to $50 million. That is agentic use of artificial intelligence technology.
Okay. Right?
Because you are incorporating this person as a personality and a role, and they're having conversations with you like an agent.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like what I have for my AI is if I'm doing something, I'll say, you know, let's say like I'm training for this like obstacle race, and I'll say, these are my stats, put together a training program for me. And the AI oftentimes will make mistakes. It's like, I just told you this thing, you made a mistake. You forgot that I'm Asian. You forgot that I have diabetes in my family. And so then I say, I want you to create a supervisor that reviews all of the content before you push it out to me so that I don't have to correct you all the time. Right? So now I have two agent layers for the same project, which is like, get me, you know, mud run ready.
Mm-hmm.
They actually can interact with each other. as opposed to in search, it's just one level. I can create multiple levels. Mm-hmm. I can even say, I want to buy real estate to flip. I want one agent to basically say yes to everything that I want to do. I want one agent to pretend that they're a really experienced one and give me a risk rating on the thing that I found. And then another one to pretend to be the board of advisors for my future conglomerate, mm-hmm. and give me an assessment of how that will work for, you know, OpEx. So I can write systems within the same ChatGPT, you know, project that then occupy three different personalities. And that's when we say like agentic, we say like, oh yeah, it's agents on agents on agents all the way down.
Yeah. I've seen, and I've seen several different definitions, but it's like at a simple, like functional level, you have the trigger, right? Like, a lot of people are using that, use say like Google Workspace or something like that. And it's already pre-written a reply based on what it's analyzed, right? Like that's an agentic use of when email comes in, look at, and then looking at past patterns, right? It's not using taste and judgment. It's just doing large scale pattern analysis on your previous emails on what the most likely response is going to be. And then you can edit from there. Obviously it can get far more sophisticated and you could have like a whole marketing team. And the supervisor bot is something that I've seen played out, and it's actually a pretty cool tool and usage, but there's a trigger. There's some sort of skill, something for it to execute against. And it's usually far more defined than people think. Like we think of handing something to a human and you've got this catalog and library of skills and abilities and knowledge and all and experience that you can go and apply. But when you build agents, you're actually needing to build like you said, it's like I've got this sort of like yes man encourager sort of agent. And then I've got the really experienced one and then this board and I need to pass all of that along and synthesize it with the supervisor bot who will then pass it on to me, right? Or you could have a graphic designer, a copywriter, a ads expert, and something else to pull together, say, a paid ads campaign on Facebook. But you would have to break those pieces down instead of it being like one superhuman or super bot. But yeah, so trigger, skills, knowledge, and memory being the big thing, like you were talking about with GPT projects. You also have Claude projects, custom GPTs, gems, things like that can be a big help. That persistent memory piece is really, really helpful, because otherwise it's like it's tabula rasa. It's blank slate every time. And I'm like, I don't want to restart it. I even start feeling like Bill Murray on Groundhog Day. And I think I just dated myself and half the audience is like, what?
And I think that we have to remember that there's two fundamental schools. There's two big bets when it comes to agent-based AI right now.
Okay.
One bet is the more data, the better the results. And to be really honest, Google is predominantly going to be the winner of that because they have so much data on us. And then you have another school, which is so long as the model and the supervisors are right, I can throw away a lot of memory and it's going to get me faster results and without compromising quality. And so if you compare, right, like a Claude-based response to something versus a Google-based response for something, you'll notice very quickly the memory dump is much, much faster on Claude. Mm-hmm. And I think the Claude code base was accidentally leaked on April Fool's Day. And people looked at the way that they designed that system and it like, oh yeah, they're constantly dumping. They're using agents to write their own code base. It's getting rewritten all the time. And it's just a model improving itself without keeping a lot of memory. And so it allows them to save GPU costs, right? So when you actually think about it that way, what you have are lots of different, it goes back to that, like, how do I think in terms of roots again, right? How do I think in terms of roots and wagons all over again? Because if I need something to remember, it's going to have, like a Google system will have all of your inconsistent like behaviors over time. Mm-hmm. And also the behaviors you let somebody else use your account, right? It's like, where did this musical preference come from? Oh yeah, like I intentionally tricked you into not having a real pattern. And then it will pull from that to try to make decisions that may or may not be accurate for where you are today and where you want to go. Right.
Yeah.
And in a Claude-based system, if it doesn't have enough data, it's going to default to popular opinion, or it's going to default to like being your best friend that will drive you to rob a bank if you say, ask how to rob a bank, right? And so then where the problem becomes on both sides is if you don't have a supervisor, where is the judgment for that, right? Yeah. Where is the, right? Like, you know, like, oh, I asked a question. I assumed that it was going to give me the right answer, but I forgot to add based on what you know about me.
Yeah.
Claude, and now it's giving me what most people are doing or what it guesses I want, to hear.
Yeah.
And then it gives me that answer, right?
Right.
Versus Google, like, oh, what was the most money that I made from you in ads based off of your entire corpus of history?
Right.
And then I will give you that because it monetizes Google better, right? And neither of those things is actually like necessarily, right? It's like completely, like it's not human, it's not taste, it's not judgment. And it may not even necessarily be helping me to do the thing that I actually want to do,
right?
Which may involve not. In the least.
And that's one reason why I advocate to people is like, don't stop learning and knowing, like, don't outsource your entire brain to AI. One, because if you didn't architect your prompts, your context, your whatever you needed to do correctly, you'll end up with popular opinion, which millions of other people's are going to end up with. And so it'll be noisier than ever when you go to market, especially in a business context, when positioning and signal versus noise is, I think, more important than it's ever been before. And it's going to become harder because everybody's going to end up with, you know, long flowery prose and 37 M dashes in one paragraph. Like, it's going to feel very homogenous. And you're like, okay, you know, I see it all the time on Reddit. They're like, okay, AI slop, or thanks AI, you know, when somebody writes a post and you're like, yeah, you didn't ever actually write this. One of the things, so I love the stuff you're saying, and I want to draw that back to then, given our conversation around judgment, taste, intelligence, but going back to that article about the AI and what are you going to do about it? How are you thinking about how we're going to do it better, or how you're advising your clients who obviously they're executives and their decisions carry weight and impact, you know, dozens, hundreds, thousands of people, you know, whatever it may be. What do we do about it when it starts to feel like the internet is just becoming one massive database layer for us to pull information, to push information out to and gather from, but it's not actually the place that we're interacting and living like we used to?
Yeah. I mean, I would say the first thing that I end up doing with most of my clients is we do a systems audit, right? How do we make the shift from procurement-oriented thinking to systems and utilization-oriented thinking? And what often we will discover is that, oh, you were actually trying to design systems that remove complexity from humans because humans that are emotional or rational are very chaotic sometimes. So I design systems that are like process factories, do these things, and it generate the same person dressed the same way with the same leadership personalities every single time, right? And you drop an agent into that, and agents are going to actually just end up making the wrong decisions over and over again. It will take away from innovation. It will become reductionist because agents don't start with complexity. Agents start with binary, zeros and ones.
Yeah.
And so, you can't just drop it in. And into it's like, oh, but I have so much structure, I can just replace that. Like, that's actually not the way that it works. It's going to end up having such a clear signal that this is what you want to hear, that you will actually generate more hallucinations than useful outputs 100% of the time. Do not drop agents into reductionist systems. Build the system that actually allows humans to absorb complexity first, right? With the feedback loop that says like what good looks like first. And be really, really careful of the shadow ethics of that, because the agents, once again, will compound it. I have a company where one of the values is power to the edges. So decentralized structure, everybody comes in. If you see a problem, go ahead and fix it. Don't ask for permission, just fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you're 20 people, 50 people, you'll never be out of the loop because it's just 20 people in an office. Mm-hmm. When you're 3,000 people, 30,000 people, you end up wasting a lot of money. So imagine 20 agents being 3,000 people, right? You're going to have people working against each other, stepping on toes with no actual connective tissue to even discover that until the money is already out the door, right? So be really careful about the shadow sides of some of those things, because you're going to have to understand how that works from a utilization perspective, right?
Gotcha.
Hey, I bought $2,000 worth of horsepower to replace all of my horses and my wagons. There are no gas stations anywhere, right? I'm going shorter distances, right, and wasting more produce than I did when I just had the horses to begin with, because I didn't grow the shadow sides of those systems and the infrastructure that we're in.
I love that. And I love the shadow side of the systems. I was just talking with a client yesterday. We were doing a kickoff and we're getting started on auditing all of his different systems within his company, because he really wants to engage with AI. But I told him, I was like, look, you can't bend your business to technology. You have to design it for the outcome you want, people, how you work. And then we can find ways that technology can support and speed up, improve what you've already decided. You got to make decisions absent from any particular tech, because when you talk about the shadow side, and it'll just compound it, make it worse. It reminds me of the advice I give with regards to like marriage. I tell people, look, getting married doesn't fix anything. I was like, it'll make good things great, but it will make bad things god awful. Right. Mm-hmm. But some people think, oh, this is all going to be fine once we get married. No, it is not. You're in for a rude awakening. And I think the same thing applies when we try to put technology first and how we design systems and user experience and even internal user experience first. So if somebody is listening to this, they're like, okay, it's clear, maybe they're now persuaded, they're living in a different age, that the one that they were raised in, that they were trained for, doesn't exactly, you know, if you want to go to certain extremes, it doesn't exist anymore. But I think it's probably more reasonable to say large portions of it don't work the way that we were taught to think about it. If they wanted to make a baby step in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money, to start to maybe retrain their brain and how to engage with the technology and the way that it's moving and emerging and the way the work will look like in the not too distant future, what's something they could do in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money, to make progress towards that?
No, I would say two things. The one very practical thing that you could do, sit down and map all the decisions that were made that propelled your company forward in some way over the last 6 months, and map the decision-making like routes that exist in your company. So that's a one way that you think in terms of, say, not just in terms of wagons, right? Where did the decisions take place? What were the workflows? A lot of times I think we go like, oh, I just had smart people, they figured it out. Well, AI is even smarter, right? So I'll just drop them in there. And it, like, smart AI doesn't just figure it out. Map the routes, and then we can figure out where we go from there. The second thing is, you know, you're always welcome to email me or ping me on LinkedIn, and I'll schedule, you know, an hour-long strategy session where we look at some of your systems, because I think that at the very least, if I can prevent you, if I can save you $1 billion to generate zero ROI, you will actually still be better for your business than if you did the thing, right, where you ask ChatGPT, how should I be using AI? And AI, like, gives you an answer that corresponds to, you know, a certain generic type of company,
right,
you know, that you're spending money on, and it's like, oh, no, you just accelerated the train wreck because you didn't know, right, the places where you set.
Absolutely. That, one, that's very generous of you. Two, that reminds me of the story of a guy who took a vacation, businessman, very successful, went down to this tropical island, saw a man who was out there and fishing, and he talked to him and says, so, like, you know, how long have you been doing this? He's like, you know, 20 years. And he's like, well, what do you do? And he said, well, you know, I get up in the morning, that's when the fish are biting, and I capture the fish and haul them in, sell them at the market. I eat lunch, and then I go hang out on the beach and I surf. And at night I go out to dinner with friends and family, and we eat and we have fun and a blast. And he goes, wow. He's like, so it seems like a pretty good life. He goes, have you thought about like maybe having more boats and you could catch more fish and what more you could do? And he says, well, why would I want to do that? It's like, well, because then you could have a fleet and you could start to hire managers. And he's like, okay, why would I do that? It's like, because then, you can start making deals with other distributors outside of the island and all that. It's like, okay, why would I do that? He said, well, you would make more money. You'd have more brand, and then maybe you could build something that gets acquired. And then at that point, like you could make all this money and cash out. He goes, and what would I do then? It's like, well, then you could, you know, get up, go fishing when you want to in the morning, go on the beach. Like, it was like all this effort just to return back to the thing you were doing. And that's all, that story has always stuck with me. When I started thinking, you know, when I let those ambitions get out ahead of me of like, well, I could do this and scale this and add this and subscribe here and do this. And then it's like, why? So I could be here. It's like, you actually didn't make any more money. You did, but you didn't profit anymore. And you were actually busier than you've ever been. So what did you really gain? Mm-hmm. So I think that's an important lesson. Well, Maximus, this has been a phenomenal conversation, and I hope it's the first of many for the show. But if somebody does want to reach out to you, take you up on your generous offer, whether through LinkedIn, email, anything, where should they be connecting with you?
Yeah, LinkedIn is my primary sort of like client-facing portal right now. And I'll also share a link where you can sign up for Strategy Syncs via Calendly.
Oh, and nice. Find some time. Excellent. We'll have that in the show notes. And people, don't skip out on this because I think he may save you $1 billion. I may, when I get the link, I may book it and take a look at this too. But Maximus, thank you so much for making some time. And this is really exciting. To the listener, thank you. You spent your day, a part of your day, your run, your drive, swim. I don't know. They got waterproof headphones now. But you spent part of your day with me and Maximus, and we don't take that for granted. You have many choices when it comes to podcasts, and we thank you for flying us. But if you did get something out of this episode or any of the other episodes that you may have consumed, please like, rate, review, subscribe. Whatever the action is on your platform of choice, I would greatly appreciate it. Send me comments. I want to make the show for you. I enjoy it because I get to talk to cool people like Maximus, but I want to make sure that it's adding value to you and your leadership and your journey. And by you commenting and interacting, it lets me know what direction to go in, but it also puts us, speaking of algorithms, it also puts these conversations in front of other people just like you who are looking for help in taking their next step. And it's a free and easy way for you to pay it forward. And won't that make you feel warm and fuzzy inside? But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.